Welcome back, all my nerds, geeks, blurs, and freaks, to another episode of Geeky, Sexual, and Intellectual. I am your host, Q, and today's guest is Mr. Clark Huggins, the creator of the Reckless Deck series for artists and writers. You know what? I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to let Clark tell you, because he has perfected the way of explaining and expressing the greatness of his product. But this is a note-taking episode. Please get your paper, get your pen, because Clark about to lay it on you. Disclaimer, I always tell y'all, technology don't never want your sister to be great. So around mark 7 minutes, it breaks and then it goes back. So don't come for me. I try. It ain't me. It's Skype, it's Zoom, it's all that stuff. Maybe because I won't pay. You know what? Off the subject. Enjoy, Clark. He got that knowledge for you. All right. Welcome back to another episode of Geeky, Sexual, and Intellectual. I am your host, Q. And today's guest is Mr. Clark Huggins from Reckless Deck. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It took too long. We talked about that beforehand.
People are busy.
Yeah, and trying to keep themselves sane all at the same time.
and standing upright.
Yeah. So basically what I've been doing these past couple of episodes, because of the special and unique situation that we're all in, I like to do a mental check-in and ask you how you're doing during this quarantine.
I'm okay. Definitely didn't change like my day-to-day life, like the way it did a lot of other people. And I feel a little bit lucky in that way because I've been working from home for years. Mm-hmm. A lot of the illustration work that I do, like my sort of day job illustration, is in advertising. And I have been able to do my job as, you know, for my advertising clients the same way I did when I was living in New York, you know, from my studio here for a long time now. So it didn't change my day to day very much. It certainly has disrupted my wife's job a lot more. She's a massage therapist and it has really limited what she can do. And my son was supposed to start kindergarten and that really just sucks that he is, you know, basically doing homeschool now with us.
Yeah. And I totally understand that. My daughter, she's in the sixth grade, but you know, she has those stepping stones. Your son is building those stepping stones. So I can see how that could be horrendous for a young child.
I mean, in that, like, his life didn't change either because it's the same as it was. But just mentally and developmentally, he's so ready to go find his people, you know, to have a class of friends or, you know, like his classmates where it's like, oh, I'm going to pick which person I want to hang out with. And I can reliably see that person every day instead of just going to the park and seeing who randomly happens to be there. I feel he doesn't necessarily feel it as much as I feel it for him. I wanted that for him really badly.
Yeah. And I briefly saw something on CNN where they were saying that we may not understand the ramifications of at-home learning until a couple of years out, especially for stepping stones children, first grade, kindergarten, first grade, because they're missing that in-class experience and that teacher and student experience that I don't know a lot of sixth grade math. I hate to say that, you know, it goes with that. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? I'm like, no, I'm so I'm not qualified to be teaching a fifth grader, sixth grader.
Totally. You know, it's the same way. I don't know the correct way to teach a kid like beginning math. And, you know, I mean, we're sort of teaching him to read. My wife's doing a much better job with that than I am right now because my plate is full with this Kickstarter. So she's kind of doing a lot of the heavy lifting there until this wraps up.
Yeah. And so emotionally, how are you? Because it'll creep up on some people. Some people are totally fine.
You know, it's definitely stressful. It's like a super stressful time in the world right now. And it just seems to get like more stressful and more stressful and more stressful. I felt strange about launching a project in the middle of all of this. You know, how do you reach out to people and be like, hey, I started a new project, like back my Kickstarter, when it feels like the news is blowing up every day. And that was, I had to really like say, you know, is this adding value? Why? You know, what do you feel like this adds to the conversation right now instead of just distracting from the conversation? That plus, like, I still got to make a living. You know, we can't just all, like throw our hands up and like become full-time social justice warriors. Like, we still gotta pay our rent. Yeah. We still gotta pay our rent, feed our family, and like pay our bills. So you still have to do your job.
Yeah.
And so in that way,
yeah,
like,
so you brought up, say that again.
No, just in that way, I feel like it just adds that's just another level of stress of being like, there's risk involved in putting a new project out there, and there's extra stress in putting a project out there now.
Mm-hmm. But it's beneficial in a lot of ways that I guess people are starting to understand, because sometimes good distraction is necessary. And what you've created is a necessary distraction.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. You have a bunch of like the original, you got a bunch of the original Reckless Deck.
Yes. So, and I'm going to get to that. And you talk about the Kickstarter, and I want to get to that too. But what I want to do is I always dig way back deep and talk about you in the beginning stages of your genius starting to produce you as an artist. Because you're an artist. You know, foremost.
Yeah. And was an actor actually, as well for 13 years as a professional actor.
Oh, wow. Okay. I got a lot of actor friends now.
So in like my whole life, it's always been like, do I want to act? Do I want to continue to illustrate? Do I want to act? Do I want to illustrate? And that when you kind of roll the tape back, the whole, my 20s and mid-30s were all like, I got my master's degree in acting and was a New York actor.
Wow. Okay. So, well, talk to me about that. I want to talk to you about your childhood. What were some of your influences? To bring out both of those things, you being an actor and you being an artist, and then, you know, fast forward as soon as you like, as far as back as you like, just talk about who you are.
I think that, I grew up, I live in Providence, Rhode Island now, and that's where I grew up. But, you know, as soon as I got out of high school and started college, I was gone. I hadn't lived here for 20 years until my wife and I moved back here 5 years ago. And I was, you know, like an art kid, very much. You know, I was always drawing ever since I was a tiny child, since I was like 2 years old. And all of my education had been focused on, you know, being an illustrator. And then when I got to college, I mean, I did plays and stuff in high school, but I didn't necessarily think I was going to throw illustration on the back burner and be a professional actor. When I got to college, I started
a little bit, but that's okay. I'm always having technical difficulties. Technology just does not want me to be great, but I am going to continue on.
Should we back that up a little bit?
We'll be right back.
Okay. I felt like I really wanted to be with people, and I really wanted to connect with people, and I wanted to have these like really peak emotional experiences. I found when I was, you know, in college that the loneliness and the solitude of the visual art was more than I could stand. It was actually like kind of bearable, and it made me want to like peel my skin off a little bit.
Yeah.
And so when I, and you know, being an actor was the total opposite of that, where you're very much in these, you know, hyper dangerous emotional situations with other people, and there's like lots of cute girls around, and people are saying and, you know, doing things that are very beyond their usual comfort zone. So for like a kid in college, that was like that very quickly became my religion.
Okay, cool. So when you decided that you wanted to be, you started out acting, but you decided at some transition point that you wanted to be a full-time artist. How did you go about that transition? Because a lot of people have different transitions in life. They have a full-time job that pays the bills, but I have this dream of a career and they just don't know the steps to get there. So
totally. You know, and I didn't start illustrating again until after grad school. I got out of grad school and I was like my early 30s and moved back to New York from Boston and was waiting tables again. And I just was like, if I keep waiting tables, I'm going to blow my brains out. I just cannot keep doing this. I've done restaurant work for like 15 years. And I had the sense that like you have all this illustration training. Can you find some way to like monetize that or professionalize that? You know, and the two things that I was kind of aware of that were possibilities was being a storyboard artist, which I didn't know necessarily what the money was there. or being a mural artist. And I actually tried mural art for a little bit, and I really did not like being in cold, dusty construction zones. Basically, you know, like you come in when a place is under construction and you do mural work, and I was just like, this kind of sucks. I don't really like doing this. I don't like being here and doing this. And I took a storyboarding class and pursued, had a friend who worked in an advertising agency. She's like, let me see if I can get you a meeting with the guy who does the, you know, who runs the art studio part of things. And I met with him. His name was Richard Chandler, and he worked at Ogilvy and Mather. And he was like my mentor and invited me in to work. After like a number of trials, he gave me some stuff to go away and do. I came back, did it. And after like two or three of those, he said, I'm going to offer you a desk. You know, it's a freelance position. It doesn't pay. You get paid when I give you the work. Like, you get paid by the job. You know, you come in here. You're being here, you don't get a salary, you don't get paid by the hour, but like you're basically on deck for when work comes in. And very quickly that started to happen. And what I found out was that I could make a really good living doing that. And so I was able to leave restaurant work kind of immediately. That actually, I was able to, it happened, once it happened really fast. And there was a lot of work. So I was super, super busy all the time. And I was still
a lot of people, even when you're in the business of it, people never grasp the concept of how much work and time and hours it takes to produce or create artwork. Or in your case, ads. It's not something overnight. And I don't know how I can stress that to like even some of my clients. They're like, hey, I need this. Here's the rundown of what I need. How soon can you get it to me? So I'm looking it over and I'm like, give me about 4 days. Oh, well, I need it tomorrow. Well, I'm not your girl. Right. Yeah, and it took me a while to get to that spot. And I would just make myself crazy. Like, I got to produce this stuff. Lose the money. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm just like, it's not really all about the money. We love the money. But you got to know when to say
hello. Well, the funny thing about storyboarding is it actually does really run on those kind of like breakneck schedules. It's really intense. You know, when you get a job, you're going to be working for like 10, 12 hours. It's not like, oh, I'll take 4 days and treat this like a normal job. When I get a pre-production advertising job, it throws like the whole household upside down because I'm chained to my desk. It's just,
I'm starting to understand that. And I don't know if you noticed from my post on Instagram, I was asked to illustrate a comic book and I'm like, the most I've ever illustrated was children's books. Uh-huh. So this is a huge undertaking. So when you talk about the storyboarding, like I'm sweating already. Because, you know, it's a learning curve, but I'm like, the way she wrote the story is like a script. So I break it down by the script. You know, what she says, pen to this or blah, blah, blah is drinking coffee or whatever. So I'm breaking it down. I'm like, I may have to call on you for like some free advice.
Absolutely. And so when I was in New York, I was doing the advertising work and I was still auditioning. I was still going on auditions and I was going on a lot of like commercial auditions and that kind of thing. I tried to produce, I actually did with some of my grad school classmates co-produce a play in New York City. And it wasn't the most rewarding experience. It was actually, a long process. We rehearsed it for a long time because we kind of like created it as we were rehearsing it. And it was just exhausting, and it wasn't rewarding. It really, am I sorry I did it? I wouldn't say that, but I didn't walk away feeling like I had fulfilled myself artistically. I felt like I had like sucked my soul completely dry. And as I was continuing to audition, and as I was continuing to, you know, go on, have the New York actor experience, which is a very, very rough experience. It is not, it's not easy, and it's not nice. And I just started to feel like, I'm not enjoying this at all anymore. You know, theater was a thing that I did that was really, like I said, it was like my religion when I first started, and it did a lot for me and changed a lot about who I became. But the actual profession of it started to feel like I was in a bad marriage. And while that was going on, the illustration work continued to work out and work out and work out, and there was more work and more opportunities and more, and I love to draw. You know, so I started to really say, I don't know that I want to keep acting. This doesn't feel good to me. This doesn't feel healthy to me. And I think that, you know, the illustration career that I was building was teaching me really rapidly what like a healthy professional life looked like and what a rewarding professional life could feel like. I don't think that, if, you know, it's not like if I had decided to say, I'm going to go and, you know, sell timeshares, I'd still be acting, you know. But luckily, I had another thing that I was equally passionate about, just in a different way, that I got to do and that I get to do for a living. And so I think there came a point where I was like, I feel like I'm ready to not do this anymore. And there was rarely really any moment where I felt like I am sorry that I did that.
Yeah. And to speak to that, I always feel like as artists, we always have something to fall back on. It could be, you know, little crummy jobs to great, magnificent opportunities, but we always have something to fall back on. If somebody else loses their 9-to-5, they're like, well, what am I going to do next? We're like, well, I hate that I lost my 9-to-5, but I can always do this until I find another one, if that's what you choose to do.
Yes, yes. And I think that artists really need to do a better job of looking at their circumstance and being like, is this working for you? Like, do you feel like you know where you're going with this? And it is this vague idea of having like an artistic career making your life like an unlivable hell? Like, are you just miserable? How long has it been this miserable? How do you see that circumstance changing? And like, if you don't have a good answer for that, you need to change your game up really seriously. You can't just, you know, continue to plow through a job that you hate, hoping that like a rescue is going to come along.
Yeah. And this is reality. That's not going to happen. You have to rescue yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
So with that being said, being an artist, sometimes you come up against pitfalls. What is it? Writer's block or artist block, as you would say. So when I found you, it was just doing a Instagram search, basically. So I think I was looking up artists, some hashtag for artists, and you popped up. I was like, this is genius. I know that... Yeah, writers have books on how to be a writer, and I know artists do too, but this is more, it's like the, Cliff's Notes of how to be an artist.
there's an important detail that I feel like there's, a link to the story before we can really talk about the card deck. As an illustrator, I decided to do something good for myself art-wise, and I took a week-long called the Illustration Masterclass. That was the first year that they were going to do it. It's been now happening for over 10 years. But I went to the very first one. It's a week-long thing held in Amherst, Massachusetts. And it's all of these really top-tier science fiction and fantasy artists who got together to do almost like a summer camp, you know, to teach illustration at a very, very high level. And I didn't really know the names of these guys. They were very well known, you know, with Magic the Gathering artists and like really, really big deal book cover artists. And I really just kind of took a chance. I'm like, this could be a terrible week. This could be a great week. And it really changed my life because what I saw, it really almost like reawakened like my inner nerd. I think that I was very, very into all that stuff growing up. And I think that when I became an actor, I was much more focused on, you know, like being a successful actor. You know, I think I left that little nerdy, like beating heart core in a box somewhere so that I could go off and like be a fancy actor.
Yeah.
And this really, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that I loved this stuff so much. And it was almost like somebody gave me a big piece of myself back. Because, and I didn't realize that it was a job. It was like, oh, I never actually realized that all that great stuff, like some artist makes that as a living. I just never put it all together. And so when I saw that that could be where this illustration thing leads to, you know, it's not about the advertising. I mean, I am grateful that advertising has paid my bills and had, you know, was a thing that moved my life forward. But I don't live to do advertising storyboards. It doesn't fill my heart up. Yeah. You know, the nerdy stuff, I realized that stuff is really, really exciting. And that the level of skill is very, very high. Like, in order to succeed in that world, the bar is very high. And that's what I've been striving for the past, like, 10 years or so. And that introduced, opened the floodgates of, like, nerd stuff just hitting me full on in the face again. And it's, you know, and it's that's the stuff that led me to create Reckless Deck.
Okay, yeah. So, because I've come up against it a lot. And I want to say in the last 10 years, I drew every day of my life since I was 5 years old.
No way.
I had my daughter, she's 11 now. And that whole span of time, I stopped drawing. Mm. So when I finally was like, you know, I don't have to wipe her ass anymore. I can draw now. so I was like, what are you going to draw? I'm like, I don't know. Okay, well, just start sketching out some stuff and just do some practice drawing. And I was like, but I don't know how to use my hand basically had atrophy. It was like I had used in so long. Things I would draw magnificent hands, just all types of hands. Can't draw a finger to save my life. And it was crushing. Like, it was like dying a little bit.
It feels very like personally like indicting of yourself. And, you know, and one of the reasons why I look back and why Reckless Deck was so urgent for me, like why I thought that this was something that I really had to put out there, was I had that feeling too a lot, you know, back really before the real acting days and back in like the drawing days. I had a lot of feeling like that, you know, that feeling that you get when you really want to be down below the surface of the water creatively. You want to be like in flow. You want to be like in that creative flow state. And instead it's like you can't get in there. Like you're just on the outside of that, knowing that it's there and that you can't quite get in there. And that is a terrible feeling.
Yeah. So to speak to that, could you tell the audience exactly what Reckless Deck is and how it was born in your head and you knew you had to move forward?
Yeah, sure. And I did it, you know, I made it as a game, just as a studio game for myself, as a just a fun thing to do, as a way to get out of the loop that you were talking about. It's a card deck series that is it's an idea generator and it's a character creation system that I made. And what it does is it grabs all of its prompts from all of the sort of iconic stuff from all across science fiction and fantasy. And it scrambles them together and gives them back to you in very unique and unexpected combinations. And it forces you to really turn in your mind what you believe those things are and how they look and how they fit together, so that you can then like meld them together and make something completely new out of it. I haven't had to do that in, like, I hope that sounded okay. That's usually like, I have to say that 100 times at every convention day, but I haven't been at that convention for a long time. Because we're not allowed to have them anymore, which is just the worst.
Yeah, but I feel that a lot of people run up against that, and they've tried to do what you've perfected. Even myself, I want to say this time last year, I pulled out one of my composition books, and I'm like, okay, this is the type of character I want them to be, whether it's the race, their height, if they have animalistic features, what's the color scheme, and I never thought about backstories. Like, you go all into that, they're what the type of world they're from, that you can pick from to build this character.
Yeah, and any little piece of information can lead you a long way. You know, everything about the regular Reckless Deck, or classic Reckless Deck, as I've come to call it now that there's like a new project on the docket. Original Reckless Deck was really built around visual tropes, you know, and they're all things from sci-fi fantasy that we all know and that we've all seen, you know, in the movies that we love. You know, there's the gun belt, the blaster, the lightsaber, or the bow and arrow, or the crossbow, or the trench coat. All of these iconic things that have been used in different ways by different heroes here and there, you know, like Hellboy's trench coat versus Neo's trench coat. Give me another good trench coat guy. You know, the Sam Spade trench coat or Gambit's trench coat. Yeah. You know, a lot of these iconic tropes can be pushed and pulled and interpreted and translated in lots of different ways. The other cards that you surround them with, you know, let's say you get that trench coat card. You put that trench coat together with a lantern and a flintlock versus a laser blaster and some sort of the power source. Suddenly it's not the same trench coat anymore. Like it changes based on, it starts to change its shape based on the stuff that you surround it with. And it's almost like the idea starts to form in your mind when you see the combination of three or four cards almost against your will. It just happens automatically. And one of the things that I really find delightful about doing conventions and demoing this in person is watching that happen in people's minds, like watching their eyes, like you can just see it form in their eyes, and the surprise that they feel that they were able to do that, that they were able to make that character happen in their own mind from looking at a hand of cards.
Exactly. And I'll take it a step further. I put a post on my Instagram about the cards, just all the decks. And an avid reader wrote to me. She was like, you know, I wonder if you can use these for writing stories. I'm like, yes, you can.
Writers
creating characters. Yeah. So this could be a prompt to building that character for your novel or short story or whatever. So yes, it has so many ways it can be used. And I'm just fascinated by it.
And role-playing gamers really dig it a lot, too. And I didn't see that going in. And it wasn't until I made Reckless Deck and started doing conventions that role-playing gamers started to really flip out about it, that I started to see how powerful a world the gamer culture was. You know, and how much, like, I'd never heard of Gen Con, really, or seen Gen Con. And when I went to do Gen Con, I was like, oh, my God, these people are crazy for this stuff. And that was cool to see the level of dedication and the level. I didn't realize that people, you know, who had these D&D groups that have lasted for years, you know, that they were crafting and writing their own narratives. They weren't just buying the module at the hobby shop. They were basically creating a world. They were creating their own universe that had been, you know, going on for years. And that level of dedication was really impressive. And I saw, like, how this could help them and how excited they were about it. And it just gives you that feeling of like, okay, this wasn't a totally terrible idea. This people actually get that this is cool, and that feels great.
Exactly. I mean, you could have classes in college with these decks.
College is used now. You know, I went to Savannah College of Art and Design before COVID shut all the stores down. We were having a lot of luck getting it into bookstores and, you know, retail places like comic book stores and art colleges were really gravitating towards it a lot. And they told me, the faculty at SCAD, when I was there, they were like, this is going to be great for my students, because my students, they always say they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they always, they don't iterate. Like they find their first idea. It's usually pretty cliche, and they get stuck there. They don't keep going forward, and they don't keep turning it around and around. And it always feels like the thing that they saw in the video game they played last night or the movie that they watched over the weekend. So they were excited. They were, as faculty, they were like, this is going to break my students out of their corridor, their lane.
Exactly, because a lot of things are reproduce. It's, you know, like, what do they say? I can't even think of that trope, where basically you produce something that you've already seen. It's like a compliment, basically, to that artist. But you can only have so many people redrawing Storm in different types of ways, like, break out of it.
Yeah. And the other big realization about creativity that this taught me is that your new idea always looks stupid. You know, Spider-Man always looks amazing. Batman always looks amazing because he's had 80 years to be amazing. You know, people have been crafting Batman and making him look terrific for 80 years. And most of what you see coming out of DC, either like on the page or on the movie screen, has been, you know, art directed to be perfect. And so Batman looks great. Spider-Man always looks great. Wolverine always looks great. It's because he's had forever to become great. Next to that, your idea is always going to look awkward and stupid. That's just a fact. And that's not because it is awkward and stupid. It's just new. You've never seen it before. And I think that there's so much pressure that we as creatives put on ourselves to make something great immediately, and that we're not willing to tolerate living with something that feels awkward and weird for a while. Like, you got to walk around with that new idea and all of its awkwardness and all of its, like, wonky edges, and you have to be willing to tolerate its wonky, ugly parts.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of, like, get used to that new character or that new idea, or really kind of just walk around with it in your heart for a little bit or in your mind, and keep sketching and sketching and resketching it, and live with how weird it feels And if you can tolerate that, suddenly that character starts to not look so weird anymore. It starts to feel like it exists in the world and feels a little more real and feels a little bit more like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. Or there are parts of it that are really cool and I can continue to, you know, sand it, shape it, you know, glom some new clay onto it, put a new costume on. But new ideas are hideous and ridiculous when pretty much as a rule when they're born.
Yeah, and you just keep at it. Like you could have started on a character 5 years ago, but if you keep adding to it, taking away from it, like you said, refining it, it'll be just as beautiful as Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, yada yada.
Right. Like how many times in your creative life have you come up with something you're like, oh, that's stupid. Oh, I'm drawing this. I hate this. This is terrible. I mean, so many times I go back to my old sketchbooks and I'm like, what was wrong with that? Like, that was a good start. And I just basically freaked out and said, oh, it's horrible. And you know, slammed the sketchbook shut. And I feel like a big part of our job as creatives is to hang in there with awkward feeling stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I learned an important lesson from a high school teacher. Oh, my God, that was so long ago. He was like, how do you feel about this? I'm like, I fucking hate it. He was like, well, go put it away and we won't look at it for 48 hours.
Nice.
And then we'll come back and then you can see it with new eyes and just start picking out what you want to change. And then it will be like it was somebody else's work at that point. I hadn't seen it for 48 hours.
Right.
And then I would have it. And then I'm like, oh, I almost trashed the whole fucking canvas.
Right. And I think that, you know, that people don't talk about that enough. I think that there's a lot of really silly stuff that people believe about creativity. I know I used to believe all kinds of stupid stuff about creativity and the process of being an artist and how that's supposed to look and, you know, how it's supposed to go. And I don't think that there's enough permission to be sucky. Because at the end of the sucky is when the good starts.
Yeah. And another thing that has given people, I guess, license to forgive themselves when it comes to art styles. When I was coming up and when you brought up SCAD, I wanted to go to SCAD. I went to Atlanta College of Art, but I wanted to go to SCAD for sequential art. And in my mind, my 18-year-old mind, I was thinking there's only one way to do sequential art. And that's like the DC and the Marvel, you know, the chiseled bodies. The tight onesies and capes. So I was like, well, I mean, I'm good, but I'm not that good. That's just not going to be my dream. So now that it hasn't always been there, but it seems to be trending now with the indie comic book industry, like your superheroes can look any way you want them to. And it doesn't have to always be a superhero. It could just be basically slice of life story of trials and tribulations that we all go through so that it can connect us. But it's just all about the style. So it doesn't have to be perfect A1 Superman. You can still have a great character and a great story with your passion that created it.
Yeah, I think that part of the process is about learning to dump your preconceptions. And man, people hang on to them tight, like they're money. Like it's not going to, that's going to get you nothing by hanging on to the stuff that you thought before you started to talk to people who knew more about the industry, who knew more about the process. And the sooner you can find those people and who can help you divest of your preconceived notions, the better you will be. And the longer you hang on to stuff that you thought was right from when you were 10 or when you were, you know, in high school or what your parents or your grandparents told you, as well-meaning as they might have been at the time, the longer you hang on to that, the more stuck you're going to stay.
Exactly. So I know we got off track with the artist therapy corner that we just had.
No, you can't not go there with this because it is, I think that it really speaks to a universal, like a hang up or sticking point. And that feeling that you get when you're stuck, the feeling when you're staring at the ceiling going like, what do I draw? Like I finally have 5 minutes. What do I do? And I feel like that sense is so personal, and it's not personal. It's actually, it's completely common. It's not about you. Like that is part of it, and everybody feels that way. It's completely a normal way to feel, and it's just a question of what are you going to do about it? How are you going to get out of that? And I made Reckless Deck as a way to completely short circuit that whole loop of, you know, what should I draw? Oh my God, I must mean I'm not talented. I'm a terrible artist. I can't do something.
Yes. You just said everything that's been in my heart for the last 15 years.
It's such a mean little gremlin. That whole loop is just so awful. And it's very common, and it's really destructive. And Reckless Deck is there to be like, okay, three cards, boom, 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 go. Make that character. And suddenly you're working. You're moving again. You're moving forward. You're on the page. You're not self-torturing yourself.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm like a genius at that. But what I want to talk to you about is your Kickstarter.
Yeah, oh, sure, sure. Okay.
Okay.
So new project, new creative system. You know, Reckless Deck, as it exists now, classic Reckless Deck, you know, this is very much an actor way to look at things. There's, you know, you can approach a character from the outside in or the inside out. And you can put on a costume or a mask or a hat or a pair of shoes, and it'll make, you know, it'll feel interesting on your body. You'll be like, oh, really? This is like, oh, it's like a leather jacket, like a motor jacket, like a motocross jacket. It's really tight, and it feels almost like I'm wearing armor. It makes me feel a certain way about myself, and so I'm going to blow that out further and make a character that moves that way, and that's how I'm going to build my character. And that's what classic Reckless Deck is about. It's like, here's how you look. This is what you're wearing. This is your weapon. These are your, you know, interesting fantasy or science fiction body modifications. Like, do you have like devil wings or like half a robot face or whatever? And you build your character based on how it looks. Psyche, Reckless Deck Psyche, is very much about the mind of your character and building your character from the inside outward, starting with, and I could not have made Psyche without my acting training, without the years that I spent as professional actor and the years I spent, you know, really more specifically in grad school, really learning acting at what I was a really challenging and very, very high level, you know, from super talented and skilled, experienced, you know, teachers and professionals. And it really showed me a lot about, like, when you go to the act of character creation, it's equally about what not to do as it is what you do. And so, and I saw a lot of silly stuff also when I was in grad school and being an actor, a lot of pretentious bullshit, baloney, you know, stuff that people do mostly because they're scared and they don't want to look like they don't know what they're doing or they don't want to be caught with their pants down. So they do a whole performance of like how painful it is and like how torturous it is to dig. And it's like, oh my God, who is buying this bullshit? And so this system is meant to be very accessible. You know, I wanted to give the categories, each one I feel like is really powerful and they're very grounded in something actionable that you can grab onto and make something out of, as opposed to being like, go sit in a dark closet and think about, like, you know, when you were sad, when you were five. That's not that useful. Like, in a lot of cases, it's, you know, it looks cool. Certainly, like, that's quite an impressive performance of how, like, a tortured artist you are. I don't know how much, like, real gold you're going to find there when you do that. And I built the Psyche system based on how, you know, how writers write and how actors act in terms of building their characters. And I tried to really fuse those two things together. A system that is like a hybrid of actor and writer process about how to make a character and grab onto the things that are going to give you the most juice.
Okay.
You know, and then like things like the super objective category. It starts with, let me back up. Psyche comes in two parts. It's eight categories. The first four categories are things that are universal to all characters, regardless of, you know, whether they're a Shakespeare character, whether they're a, you know, a Jane Austen character, whether they're a Star Wars character. There are things about just characters as narrative things that are universal across the board. The last four categories are genre specific. They're meant to be, you know, like a specific to the world you're working in. Or if you mix them together, you get like a weird mishmash, which is very, you know, Reckless Deck style. And you make a new world by, you know, taking two different worlds and mashing them, just shuffling those cards together. So in the second half, you get a genre-specific thing about this is your occupation. This is what you do for a job. This is a secret that you might be keeping, but secrets are usually specific to the world we live in. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of secrets that I keep are probably different than the secrets that Han Solo kept.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, somebody in 1690 kept. So it's really meant to be, to put you in a specific world.
Yeah. So, okay. And when I think about psyche, because that never, when I was growing up, that never entered my mind about their psyche outside of Batman. He's like royally fucked up. So, yeah, I'm like, those guys were Jesus. So when I think about the show, The Boys, and how just, God, they're like a meat grinder in their psyches. But they have the outward appearance, the beautiful aesthetics, but I'm a fucking beast on the inside. So whoever wrote their psyches was a genius also.
Totally agree. And you know, it was conventions that prompted me to create this system, because that was the thing that we were getting asked for the most. Is, do you have anything about like your character's inner world? You know, mm-hmm. Writers really wanted it, gamers really wanted it, and it came up again and again and again. So on the list of to do, that was like at the top, where this is what the, you know, the people are asking for the most. And I started to see that maybe this product had a much wider appeal than regular Reckless Deck, which is about, you know, there's a fair amount of us that want to draw fantasy orcs and elves and robots, who want to draw fantasy and science fiction characters, but there's a much, much bigger universe of people who want to write.
Yeah.
And so I think that I'm seeing that, you know, I'm seeing the response to this being a lot larger than, you know, regular Reckless Deck, and also from lots of different genres and lots of different places, which is why I built, you know, Psyche to not be necessarily just like a nerd genre vehicle. That's why the core set comes with, you know, all the universal cards and the cards for contemporary life. I didn't want to make it, you know, I could have easily made it come with the epic fantasy cards. But not everybody wants to write epic fantasy. Some people just want to write about the world we live in. They want to write about characters that, you know, that are people who you'd meet on the street, like yourself or myself. Mm-hmm. And so that, but then, you know, you create these other, we created a series of companion decks. You know, so like you can swap out the genre. You keep the first four cards and the second four cards. You can plug in and out based on the world that you want to write in. Epic fantasy plugs right in, and now you have eight categories that work in like a D&D world or a Game of Thrones world. You take epic fantasy out and you plug in the espionage companion, and suddenly you're writing about government conspiracies and, you know, black ops teams and spy stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a whole world of writer that I never had, that with regular Reckless Deck, I didn't have anything to really offer.
Yeah. So with this, I'm not going to even lie to you. And it's not, you know, I'm not biased or anything. I was like, I'm never buying another art book ever again, because this is limitless. I was like, I'm so excited about this. And then I have to tell this story. So when I got on Amazon and I found your box, beautiful box here. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get the whole shebang. Oh my God. Because it was for my birthday during the quarantine. I'm going to get myself something great. And so when the box came, my daughter was like, oh, it opened it. And I opened it and it was empty. I was like, what the fuck? So I was like, oh, that's what happens when you're dyslexic and you don't read. And then we reached out to each other and you made my dreams come true. So that's basically to relate to people. Like, this is a limitless source of information for artists, story writers, show writers. Anybody can use this. It taps into all those genres. So when does the Kickstarter begin?
It's on now. Like, you can go on Kickstarter.com and it's happening right now. It ends on October the 13th.
Okay.
Tuesday. So right. another from the date of this conversation right now, it's got another like 8 days.
Okay. And so you want to break down the Kickstarter? Like, what do you get if you help my old boy Clark out?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of different levels that you can get. There is like, you get everything. You get one of everything. There is that tier, which has been super popular, which that's exciting, because we've unlocked a lot of stretch goals. Actually, I had to kind of like pull back a little bit and be like, how much shit have you promised you were going to make for these people? Like, you may need to, like, reel it in. It was fun. It was sure fun putting all those stretch goals out there really fast, but it was almost like getting the bill at the restaurant after you've had, like, you know, you and your friends have had four bottles of wine, and you look at the bill, and you're like, exactly. We paid what?
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot of stuff available now. I think there is obviously the core set, which comes with 400 cards. There's all the companion decks, which give you, you know, the different genres. I think there's 8 of them now. We did Epic Fantasy, we did Espionage, Urban Fantasy is another one, Steampunk is one, Horror, Cyberpunk is one, and Post-Apocalypse is one, so like Dystopia. So you've got all these different worlds that you can plug in to the system or swap in and out of. We did playmats. We have a hold everything box, which is probably going to be like a large game box. We have to see how much stuff we're actually going to end up producing before we can design the box, because we've got to see what we're making to fit in the box first. Oh my goodness! I can't believe I didn't mention this earlier. There's going to be an anthology of short stories that we're creating. And there is currently a contest right now for a short story contest through our website, recklessdeck.com. You go on there, and there's like the Psyche contest, and you write a short story. On our website, you can download a free 54 card preview, like a print and play that you can print out at home and cut out of the Psyche cards. And it's like a mishmash from all the different companion decks and the core set that give you 54 cards, so you can really get a sense of what Psyche is, how it works, and what it does for you. If you use that print and play to write a short story, you send it in, and you might win to get your story published in the anthology. And the anthology is going to be a very much a ping pong of style and genre. You can write in steampunk, you can write in anime, you can write in whatever, because I know you hate anime so much. So like you can write in any world, in any style you want to. The connective tissue for all the stories is gonna be the prompts. You're gonna see the same prompts come up in different stories, and they're gonna get used in completely different ways. And they're just gonna be like these weird little buoys out of the ocean that are just like blinking, being like, oh, that again. And that person used that in a completely different way to tell a completely different story. It's really going to be a collection of stories that's about how to use these, these kind of impersonal, standardized prompt cards and make something extremely personal and extremely unique and use them in a way that, and to show that they can be used in ways that no one else would have thought of. And I think it's going to be a really exciting compilation of stories. And we just secured Greg Manches, who is a great mentor and friend of mine. He's one of the illustrator teachers at Illustration Masterclass. And he wrote a book called Above the Timberline. And it's a gorgeous illustrated novel that's like a kind of future dystopia, like frozen earth kind of story about like a boy explorer. And he is going to write the masthead story, he'll be our featured author, and he is going to write a new story that takes place in his world that he established in his book Above the Timberline. So he's using it as like a testing ground to write a sequel to that story.
Oh my God! Okay, this all sounds so fabulous. I just get so inspired by people helping people. And you know, it's not free, but you're helping people, and they don't even realize how much you're doing for them, like saving them so much time.
I hope so. I hope that because that gremlin has got to go. You know, we just got to get rid of that thing that is like standing on our consciousness, ideas in. And one of the things I realized about using prompts is for some reason it takes the pressure off. Suddenly it's like it's just a job. It's almost like somebody gave you like in a tier, draw this. Now go do it. And it's suddenly not about you anymore. And it becomes something more mundane, like doing sit-ups or vacuuming the floor. It takes the pressure off of you and makes it so that you can, you know, create, get around the high stakes of like, is this any good? Am I any good? and that you can work on something and just do it and have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and I hate to ask you this because we're talking about your Kickstarter now, and but I want to know, what are you working towards for the future?
Oh,
like, I haven't even finished this yet. Why are you talking about that?
Well, you know, I kind of wish our first Kickstarter was 3 years ago, and it took a while to produce that stuff. It took a while to fulfill that Kickstarter, and I've got lots and lots of spreadsheets, which is why sometimes it's really hard to post on Instagram, because you're like, do you really want to see me looking at spreadsheets? That's not cool. That's not interesting for Instagram. Yeah. But what I'm making is cool. It's just not cool to look at. We've got these. And I mean, of course, to your podcast people, this means nothing because they can't see this. But Volume 1 and Volume 2 are getting a new edition. And they're going to look pretty fancy and shiny with a, like that beautiful foil on the card box. I'm really excited about these. Not to disparage the current Volume 1 and Volume 2 that we sell, but this is a little bit of a revamp, because I've been demoing it for 3 years now. You know, and I can see, like, oh, that card is a little bit of a clunker, or, you know, like, I feel like something is missing here. That there's just there's a space that needs to get filled by a card that doesn't exist yet, and so there's some changes made to the content, and so they are going to be very pretty, on a heavier card stock, and they I think are going to deliver a little bit of a cleaner, more wealth. I don't want to say well thought out, because that again makes it sound like the current version is no good, which I definitely do not believe. But it's a little bit, it takes the system and the sophistication to a slightly higher level. And so now that we've established this as the standard, we want to go back and revamp all the expansions. You know, there's going to be a much higher, just the physical quality of them is so going to be so much nicer. And they really are not going to match our expansions right now, because we couldn't afford to do the foiling. Like, if you look at the expansions, you'll notice the card back is different than slightly different. And that's always bugged me. And so we're going to take the expansions up all so that the system is all, like, unified design-wise.
Yeah, even with that. Your artist is showing. I'm like, they're beautiful. You're like, no, it could be better.
One of the things you're going to find in the volume two that you have, there's a category called reinvention. And I really like to reboot existing characters and put them in, you know, weird worlds, like, you know, what's the Revolutionary War Captain America, or the steampunk Iron Man look like, or the post-apocalypse version of Vision. That's fun for me. What I found is that card category didn't integrate as well with the other cards. It sort of like was off to the side. So as much as I love doing reinvention, we're going to retire the reinvention category for now. And we'll be introducing that category replaced by the superpowers category. So volume two will come with superpowers now. And we will be doing more with superheroes in the future. And you're going to see a lot more of the superpowers category.
Once I get a moment to breathe from the comic book I'm working on, I'm gonna start laying the cards out all over my little office floor so I can create me some new gals. I like to draw women. I think a lot of people do. Draw me some badass women.
Use it for your comic. Do you have your script all done? Is your script all like laid out and set up?
Well, yeah, the script is done. It just needs my storyboard.
Okay, all right. And you're doing all the art? You can do the penciling and the inking as well?
Yes. And I'm doing everything through Procreate.
Oh, cool. All right. So there's not going to be any digital. It's all going to be digital. You're not going to have any, like, original art and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just going to be all digital.
That's awesome. How many issues is it?
It's actually just one graphic novel now. I think it's between 26 and 30 pages. So I think it's going to be really great. And what's so crazy is Corona. It was supposed to be a TV show, but nobody's making shows. Well, people are trying to ease back into it.
Yeah.
But at the height of it, nobody was making shows. They had to, you know, basically shelf it. So the author was like, well, let me make a graphic novel. Do you want to do it? I'm like, yeah.
That's great. So it was not just written to be a TV show, but he actually had, like, he had sold it to a studio?
I don't know the intricacies of it all, but I think they had a couple people that were very interested. But they're like, yeah, no, we're not shooting anything right now.
Right. Hey, if you can, they want graphic novel properties, and, you know, anything made that's a graphic novel is going to have a much better chance of being sold and getting produced than just some script. So the graphic novel version of this can only help your concept.
I will spread that good word. She'll be over the moon. But yeah, Clark, it was so great talking to you today. I've learned so much. I feel like I'm just too personable. I just feel like I made a new friend.
Oh, you definitely did. And the weird thing is, you know, I feel like I know you better than you know me, because I'm listening to your podcast and, you know, so I'm like, oh, I feel like we've hung out all the time. And then I'm like, oh, wait, we've never actually spoken. So I have this, like, I have this weird, like, kind of creeper stalker relationship with you that you don't realize, because I've been listening to your show.
That makes me feel so good, because quite literally, I just feel like I'm talking into the dark, like into the wind, because I like to talk to people. I like to know their stories. I like to swap stories and see how we connect on certain issues. We may have walked us on the same path at some point in life.
Right.
And it's just, that's crazy to me that we're like ships in the dark. Like, I had one interview, we both lived in Atlanta at the same time, and my dream job was to work at Cartoon Network, and he worked at Cartoon Network.
Oh, cool.
At the same time in life. So I was like, it's just crazy. Like, we're passing each other in life and we don't even realize how interconnected we all are.
So I have a question for you. Do we have a couple of more minutes, or you got to go?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's a question for you regarding Psyche as a thing that's being built, that we've done a ton of writing for it, but we still have a lot more writing to go for it. And I have a favor to ask. I have a question for you. It's pretty clear from listening to your show that you have a pretty strong audience in the African American community.
Yes.
You know, a lot of your guests are Black, and you talk a lot about, like, your experiences in your life. Clearly, I'm not Black, but I'm very aware that Psyche needs to be accessible and useful to all kinds of people. And I want to know if you have any advice or knowledge of your audience or your friends or your fellow creatives. How can Psyche, what does Psyche need to have in it to make it feel more inclusive to Black people, to Hispanic people, to people of other, you know, races and other experiences?
Not to be topical, but even what we're going through today with the climate of America, it doesn't even have to be present times. It could be at any in history. Somebody had to go through adversity. How did they go? Because that's it's sad to say, but that's a lot of backstory of people of color, just adversity. So how does that change a person? How does someone get through it? How does someone, and that changes them for the worst or for the better? I think that's basically what, and a lot of indie comics of people of color, that's pretty much an adversity or tragedy happened to them to make them the hero or the villain that they were. So I think I answered that question.
Okay. Because I don't feel like it's not inclusive of them right now, because I feel like the prompts are meant to be picked up and you could apply them to, you know, any race or gender or creed that you want to. But it's really important. I'm like, this is just one of those things. When you make things like this and you put things out in the world, you're like, don't fuck this up. You know, like, just, this is, you got to be really careful to make sure that you don't, like, really miss something that, you know, afterwards people are like, yeah, but what about? And then you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that I didn't think of that or include that or take the time to expand my consciousness a little bit more.
That's a given. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I try to, okay, so let me play devil's advocate, like, to place myself in your shoes. Not that you don't think about it, because, you know, I know that you do. But let's just say you're an individual that you don't think about social issues that take place. There's a reason for that, because that's not your everyday life. It's not an excuse, but I can understand why. So you flip that back around, that's my everyday life. Whether I read something on the news, I hear something on the news, the radio, a friend of mine called me to tell me that something happened to their nephew or their son or what have you. So, yeah, it's good to ask. Basically, that's what I'm getting around to.
Mm-hmm.
And don't ever feel like, oh, well, I'm a trash-ass human human being because I'm not thinking about this. It's just, realize I'm not thinking about this, and maybe you should delve into it every once in a while. Not to get oversaturated with it, but, you know, to be present.
Yeah. Okay, right on. All right, good. That's super helpful, and I really do hope that when this comes out, you know, once we print it and have it available, that all kinds of different people will find it, you know, equally accessible and useful, and can create extremely cool stories that relate to, you know, their lives and their imaginations.
Exactly. Well, that's the end of our show.
Right on. Thank you for taking the extra time for that.
Yeah, no problem. I just want you to tell the listeners where they can find you, how they can get all this goodness from you. So just hit them.
Okay. My personal art you can find at clarkhuggins.com. You can find the Kickstarter on the Kickstarter website and just type in Reckless Deck Psyche into the search bar and it should come right up. And again, there's still a little more than a week to go for the Kickstarter. And regular Reckless Deck, you can, or classic Reckless Deck as we're calling it now, you can find at recklessdeck.com. And you can also find the free 54-card download of Psyche on recklessdeck.com and information about how to enter the writing contest, the short story contest, which I hope lots and lots of your listeners will do.
Yes, and send me some information on that, because I want to post that too, because I have a lot of people that they're not really into comic books, but they're into sci-fi novels and things of that nature, so yeah. I think they would love that.
Great, all right. I'll send all that to you, like, right now.
Okay, no problem. All right, Clark, well, you have a great day, and I may have to skip you up a couple of interviews, because I fucking love art.
Well, that's all. Thanks. Skip me up. That sounds great.
Okay, like, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Totally. This was so fun. Thank you.
Yes. All right.
All right, y'all. I hope y'all learned something. And for those of y'all that did, that will never tell me, you're welcome. I picked a goodie. Yes, Clark, he got that knowledge because, you know, he's been in the business for a minute and he's doing his own thing and he's going to cons and talking to other artists and seeing what they need and how he can assist. So I thank him for his magnanimous brain. I have my set and I'm going to start using it as soon as I find some free time. From working on this comic book that I'm working on. I know you probably have seen it all over my social medias. So, I hope you took your notes. If you didn't, please go back. You may have missed something. You may have learned something that could help you excel in your career as an artist or any other aspect of life. We talked about some shit. Okay, so again, you can support the show through the Cash App is $GadgetsAndGeekery. You can also support the show through Anchor. And give a donation. We also have some merch over on the Gadgets and Geekery website. Tons of stuff there. Something for everybody. Give us a call on the hotline, and I'm such a piece of trash, I don't even have the number in front of me. I hate doing stuff like that. I'm so ill-prepared. And we also have a Discord, 21 and up. If you are 21 and up, don't play with me. Send me a message in DM on Instagram, and I will try to get you in. But eventually that will be an option through Patreon. I think that's all we got today. Head over to the Blurred Fleet on Instagram and check out what we're doing over there. Again, Blurred Fleet is a collective of Black online creators, artists, etc. Give us a look, a like, a comment, a share, all of that good stuff. So until next time, y'all be good. Y'all be careful out here in these streets. You know where we from. I holler.